Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, February 12, 2019, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Excuse me. Our next two Starseed quests to Arkansas are March 15th through the 18th for the spring equinox Athena's birthday, and then May 17 through 20 for Pleiadian lineup. This is a soul group reunion, and all star seeds with at least one star marking at galactic degree are welcome. There are only a few spots left for both events, so if you feel the call of the crystals, please write to crystals@starseedhotline.com for more info. Our special guest this evening is Dr. Barbara Hong, who obtained her PhD from Columbia University in addition to three master's degrees. She is a three-time recipient of the prestigious Senior Fulbright Scholar and has been appointed by the U.S. State Department Bureau of International and Information Programs as a speaker specialist and expert on disability, consulting with ministries of education around the world. She's been a professor for more than 16 years and has taught in four states and now in Hawaii. Her research has been cited in major handbooks, Library of Higher Education, university recommended readings, and various institutes of education library. She's a recipient of the Teacher of Honor Award, University Exemplary Faculty Award, advisor for the Oxford Educational Research, Board of Directors for the Council for Exceptional Children, a certified special educator, principal, and administrator. Tonight she'll be talking about her book, Failing Up, A Professor's Odyssey of Flunking, Determination, and Hope. She recently worked as the education specialist for the Virginia Fairfax County Government, Department of Family Services, and Institute of Early Learning. Currently, Dr. Hong is a professor and program coordinator of special education at Brigham Young University in Hawaii. You can visit her website, which is BarbaraHong.com. At the top of the show, it's Anastasia's Starseed News, bringing topics of interest to starseeds that you won't hear in the mainstream. And we'd like to thank Kathy and Jada for hosting the switchboard tonight for those who may have a question or comment for our guest. We have an online Starseed community at starseedhotline.ning.com, and it's a safe place to connect with other starseeds thanks to Tammy's helpful dedication. You can download our shows on iTunes or right here on Blog Talk. And if you'd like to show your support of our program, please, all you have to do is click follow on our page here, and you'll get our weekly show notices if you enable those notifications. Our main website is starseedhotline.com. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart, and the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. And if you have a birthday coming up, don't miss out on your 10 hours of power. You can find out when it happens by requesting your solar return timing. And if you want a Stage 2 interpretation of that chart, please order it 4 months ahead of your birthday to make sure you get it before your 10 hours, because we do have a waiting list. So first up tonight, I'd like to introduce Anastasia with her fascinating Starseed news. Hey, Anastasia.
Well, hey there, Arielle. Good evening, everybody. Great to be with you. It's a cold night where I am, and winter is still... we're still in the throes of it, but spring is just around the corner. We have some geomagnetic unrest possible this week. Solar wind flowing from a south polar hole, in the sun's atmosphere might graze Earth's magnetic field on Valentine's Day, the 14th or possibly even the 13th. We'll see what happens with that. And there are five most active volcanoes in the Indonesian archipelago that are rumbling right now. The eruption of little-known volcano Mount Karangitang in northwest Sulawesi has added to the list of active volcanoes that have recently awakened, home to more than 230 million people there in Indonesia. That country has more than 120 volcanoes, 20 of which have been considered to be the most active, and 5 of the most active volcanoes that have had some sort of cautionary activity recently would be Mount Kerangetang, Mount Agung, Mount Merapi, Mount Sinabung, and Mount Anak Krakatoa. So that chain of islands is so geologically active, and 5 right now have alerts associated with them. And in Costa Rica, the Poás volcano has registered an overnight eruption that closed their national park and sent a column of ash 200 meters above the crater. This happened yesterday morning on Monday. And in Lake Tahoe, wow, do they have snow and more snow. A winter storm dumped over 3 feet of snow at some Lake Tahoe ski resorts over 24 hours this weekend. And according to Squaw Valley's snowfall tracker, the resort has recorded 393 inches of snow at 8,000 feet, which is about 33 feet of snow.
Oh, my gosh.
No, more than the height of a house. Wow. And there has been winter storms in Hawaii, also with record high waves, flooding, extreme winds, and again, rare snow. They're telling us this is an extremely powerful winter storm that's now pulling away from Hawaii after unleashing damaging winds, massive waves, coastal flooding, and snow in unusual places, which Hawaii is an unusual place, although they do have some on the tops of the mountains occasionally. Well, the storm, which the National Weather Service in Honolulu has described now as historic, began pounding the islands on Friday. And forecasters are calling this an unprecedented event. The storm's most extreme wind was generated on the Big Island's towering peak of Mauna Kea, where 191 mile-per-hour wind gust blasted the mountain summit on Sunday. And forecasters tell us that that is the strongest wind gust ever seen up there, that they might get a gust of maybe 150 miles per hour once each winter or so, but never 191 miles per hour. And in Hokkaido, Japan, they have a record cold of minus 24 centigrade, very cold. They say that it was brought on by an air mass of temperatures that gripped this country on Friday, causing traffic disruptions on the northernmost Japanese mainland. Now, the Japanese Meteorological Agency predicted snowfall on Saturday in eastern Japan with this very, very cold weather, the lowest temperatures since this agency began compiling data in 1957. And scientists are telling us now that the plummeting insect numbers signal global collapse of nature. Yikes, the world's insects... this article says are hurtling down the path to extinction, threatening a catastrophic collapse of nature's ecosystems, according to the very first global scientific review on this subject. They tell us that more than 40% of insect species are declining, and a third are endangered. The rate of extinction is 8 times faster than that of mammals, birds, and reptiles. The total mass of insects is falling by a precipitous 2.5% a year, according to the best data available, suggesting that insects could vanish within a century if that rate of decline continues. According to this report, the planet is at the start of a 6th mass extinction in its history, with huge losses already reported in larger animals that are much easier to study than insects. But insects are by far the most varied and abundant animals on the planet, outweighing humanity by 17 times. They are absolutely essential for the proper functioning of all ecosystems, researchers say, as food for other creatures, as pollinators, and as recyclers of nutrients. Heads up on that one. Make us more conscientious, maybe, of what we do. New Zealand is battling its worst wildfire in more than 60 years. It's a massive brush fire that's churned through more than 5,600 acres on New Zealand's south coast in what is believed to be the country's worst forest fire since 1955. State of emergency was declared last week, and as of Monday, the blaze was still scorching the island's countryside. And fire chiefs are telling the locals that these fires could continue until March. Well, here's a story reflective somewhat of the conflicted nature of human management of the environment. To protect imperiled salmon, fish advocates are wanting to shoot seagulls. Now, there are a lot of predators known to eat imperiled salmon, from sea lions to double-crested cormorants. Well, now one study of Oregon hydroelectric dams suggests that seagulls account for 20% of the loss of baby salmon. Now, an aviation predation expert, really there is such a thing, aviation predation expert proposes the solution is lethal control of problem gulls in addition to non-lethal harassment. Really, that's how this is written. He goes on to say that not all gulls are guilty of eating salmon, but some of them are, this fish manager reports. And he says that the ones that are routinely up in the channel that carries the water away from the dam that eat the salmon probably just need better management. They tell us that gulls also steal fish from other birds, like terns. And they say that that doubles the amount of salmon eaten because the victim bird must replace its catch. At the same time, the same person, the same researcher, admits that some gulls can actually help salmon. Well, which is it? That they hurt salmon or do they help salmon? And the article goes on to say that any killing of gulls referred to as lethal management or lethal control by the government is a tactic the Audubon Society of Portland vehemently opposes. It is a continuation, they say, of a very unfortunate pattern of killing wildlife to protect other wildlife. And he goes on to say, it's not the wildlife that's the problem, it's the dams. The Army Corps of Engineers have refused to do what is necessary to modify those dams to protect the salmon, and that is why salmon are continuing to decline. Killing wildlife is not going to change that situation. He goes on to say, these birds, the gulls, are simply doing what comes naturally, eating fish. Well, the government can waive environmental laws to build border law prototypes. According to the court, the Trump administration was within its rights to waive dozens of environmental laws to fast-track some border construction projects in Southern California, according to a federal appeals court. The Department of Homeland Security said in 2017 that it would bypass various environmental regulations, including the National Environmental Policy Act, the Clean Air Act, and Endangered Species Act, to quickly construct barriers and roads along the U.S.-Mexico border. By granting itself the waiver now, the government avoided the requirement to complete environmental impact studies. But environmental advocacy groups in the state of California have challenged this waiver in court, arguing that the agency has overstepped its authority. And we've often talked about drought in California now for quite a while. But water in California now has brought a year's worth of water. And although California by now has a reputation for persistent drought and water scarcity, already this year, the state's freshwater reserves are worth celebrating. Storms in the beginning of January brought an influx of snow to the Sierra Nevada and heavy rains elsewhere across the state, and now its water reservoirs are boosted exponentially. Over the first 3 weeks in January, 47 key reservoirs added 580 billion gallons of water, as much as roughly 9 million people use in a year. The combined storage in the California reservoirs has expanded by 15 million acre feet from the 1st of January to almost 18 million acre feet right now. And they say Each acre foot is enough water to flood an acre of land a foot deep for a total of 325,851 gallons. So,
wow.
Water everywhere. They're in pretty good shape right now. That is a very good thing. And in the South Pacific, there is a four-year-old island that was spawned by a hidden underwater volcano. It's called Hunga Tonga, and it's the only third volcanic pop-up island like this to have arisen in the last 150 years. Well, 4 years ago, this island arose out of almost nothing. Now it is a sprawling formation of jutting rock popping up in the South Pacific, where at one time there were only waves. And right now, this island created by the volcano, Hunga Tonga, is covered with beautiful pink flowers and green, lush, creeping vines that spontaneously erupted over its earlier barren surface, sprung up out of nowhere, proving once again that the force of life finds a way to happen. It's amazing. The photographs of that are stunning. You know, there was anybody to plant seeds. Nobody went over there to got on that volcanic rock and started to plant seeds. Life spontaneously appeared. It's a wonderment. And the flowers are beautiful. Well, here's an adorable story, something to make you scratch your head. It's cute. It's true. Chimpanzees have built a ladder to escape from the Belfast Zoo. Well, any one of us would want to escape from any prison, of course. But there is this group of smart chimpanzees who temporarily managed to do just that, escape from their enclosure, by building a makeshift ladder to escape from the Belfast Zoo in Northern Ireland. Just very recently, this month, a group of clever and enterprising chimpanzees managed to get out of their enclosure by popping a tree branch against the wall to enable their escape. They just picked up a branch, dragged it over to the wall, lifted it up, propped it against the top of the wall, climbed up the branch, and bingo bango, they're out of prison. All five of the chimpanzees left their cage or their enclosure. Now, they were later seen striding down an embankment and onto a road. But later, all of the chimpanzees returned home voluntarily. They weren't too interested in human society or buildings. They wanted to go home. The zookeeper says that the trees inside the chimp enclosure were weakened by storms, enabling the chimps to use fallen branches and ladders to make their escape. And he says that these chimpanzees return to their confines because they're intelligent primates and know they're not supposed to be out of their enclosure. So they managed to find a way to get back in themselves. I wonder,
oh, wow.
As I read this, and they didn't say, did the chimpanzees drag a branch from the outside of their cage or their enclosure to prop up on the wall so they could climb back in? Or did they leap to the top of the wall? We don't know that. All we know is that they managed to get back in, but isn't that something? And then I thought to myself, isn't this a lot like human beings? You know, a lot of times freedom is an elusive thing. I mean, we think about it. There is always to look at freedom, many ways we can consider it, but there's emotional freedom, there's physical freedom, there's political freedom, there's all kinds of freedoms, but it's so common for human beings that once they're freed from one type of imprisonment or another, metaphorical or otherwise, so often they choose not to leave or maybe even to go back. So in any event, that's what the chimps did. They didn't like their freedom too much, and so they went home. And I thought, well, there's plenty to eat back home, so why not? So
I think
that's what happened.
The best part of that is that they had to work together.
Yeah, absolutely. Five of them working together. Isn't that adorable? And one didn't leave alone, or two, they all stuck together. And they all came back together. Isn't that wonderful? It's wonderful. Oh, gosh, the things that we could know about animals if only we could. I mean, the hidden mysteries, the secret life of animals and what they know and how they communicate and the great intelligence that they possess. Wow, it's a wonderful thing. Well, that's it for tonight's news, Ariel. Thank you very much. It's going to be a great show tonight.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so much for the Starseed news. I'll be thinking about those chimps later. That's funny.
Isn't that wonderful? It's wonderful.
Yeah.
You can find that on the Internet. Belfast, Northern Ireland is where this happened at the zoo. There's pictures of it. In fact, there's videos of it on the Internet. They videoed the chimps in there as they were escaping. I think they followed them to see what happened. They didn't try to round them up. So, anyway, there you have it.
Good for them.
See you all
next
week.
Thanks so much, Anastasia. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, I am going to get Lavendar's mic open here and Dr. Hong, get your mic open. Okay. Well, Dr. Hong, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you with us.
Aloha.
Aloha. I was thinking about you when she was talking about Hawaii and the storms and the wind. Oh, my gosh. Because are you on the Big Island?
No, but I just recently went to the Big Island, and I understand what she's talking about. But it has been really drastic, the weather here. But I can't complain. It is not snowing in the North Shore.
Oh,
beautiful waves that we can see, and very safe compared to the snow and wind chill.
Oh. Well, Lavendar, are you set to go?
I'm set to go.
All righty, take it away.
So, Barbara, I received your book. I must admit, though, that I haven't read but just a few pages. I've had some family things that I had to take care of, and I haven't been able to keep up with all my reading. But I'm really impressed by the way that you have, taken your life in your hands and gone forward. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this book that you've written called Sailing Up, and how did you decide to write it?
Well, in my field, it's mostly doing research papers, and you know, that would have been a lot easier. So it is a very hard task to have to openly basically expose your life and to tell people about it. But what really got me into writing this is one time when I was teaching at Penn State, and there was this 23-year-old whom the mother had paid me, you know, a good amount of money to help him, you know, basically like a life coach. And he said, and he's alcoholic and, you know, struggling in school. And he goes, "You know what? You are Asian. You will never understand what is it that I'm going through. You went to Colombia. Your parents are probably rich and educated, and you never know what is it like to go through the life like I did." And it dawned on me that he's not the only one. Oftentimes when I meet people, they have a certain, you know, stereotype about Asians. We always just have it all together. We know exactly from point A to point B what we want to do, self-reliance and all of that. And especially with the recent movie of the Crazy Rich Asian setting place in Singapore, clean, wealthy, smart people, and I'm not any of those at all. And so that started me in writing this book to tell my story so that people can understand no matter what the background you've been through, you can arrive at something, you know, with, you know, as we talk about it, I'll share with you more.
So tell us a little bit about your upbringing with your family and how you decided to leave there to better your life. Tell us what happened to you as a child.
Well, my whole life, all I know is my dad is an alcoholic. You know, he doesn't bring home any income. My home is a sweatshop, but I'm grateful for that because that's how we make it work. Every dozen of clothes that we snip the threads of the buttons, the sleeves or sewing, we get about 30 cents for each dozen. So we have to do a lot of that. So as far as I know, growing up, that's what my life is like. A lot of time my dad, who doesn't come home, my mom will gather us together and basically trying to, you know, have a mass suicide, whether we're drinking chlorine or taking a knife, a scissors to stab ourselves. Basically, she's so distraught that she just wants to kill all of us. But it became such a routine that what we go through every week that I don't know what is it different. And on top of being an alcoholic, my father gambles, and so it comes with, you know, abuse going on in the home. And my mom is illiterate. So when I say that, it means she doesn't know how to write her name. And she was given away without her knowing at 4 years old and never returned back to her own parents. And I have three other siblings. I'm the youngest. So none of my siblings finished 10th grade. So that is my mother's biggest wish is, well, maybe one of you will finish 10th grade, which is the equivalent of 12th grade, you know, in the United States. And her biggest dream for any of us is if one of us worked in an office with air condition, that would be the most luxurious job that you could have or to aspire to be. So growing up, that's all I know. You know, school is not important. It's about survival. And I don't think it's uncommon. A lot of us growing up in the neighborhood at that time, that's what life is about.
So what age were you when you were able to leave there?
Well, to carry on a little bit of the upbringing is when I was, why is it that I, you know, didn't pay attention to school and all that, and then coming to America to study, is that when I was, I'm the fourth child, and at the time, Singapore had just separated to be independent from Malaysia. So if you have, the government is trying to control the population called stop at two. So if you have the third child, the government will forgive you, but not the fourth child, and I'm the fourth child. So my mom revealed to me when I was in trying to enter school at first grade and keep getting rejected schools after schools, is that she tried to abort me twice when she was carrying me with, you know, 6 months pregnant with me. And she couldn't get rid of me, so she often remind me that you don't really have a brain, so don't try to study too hard because then your brain will explode. Now, remember, she's not literate, so that's all she thinks about. It's like, you know, now that you're born, you cannot really study, so don't try too hard. You know, you're retarded and your brain is already damaged because of what I've taken. Not from a legal doctor, but from a back alley, you know, some snake oil person who sold her some things to drink and to take. So growing up, just basically passing through schools, it's never been a big priority. I cannot read till I was in fourth grade or barely reading. We don't have any books in the home at all. And so school is just a routine. But when I was in 10th grade, like I said, that was the most important year of school. We have to take an exam called a Cambridge exam, which is like the equivalent of SAT here. I didn't even show up for the exam, basically. But so I should expect myself to fail. But somehow when I flunked that grade, it was the most humiliating thing I ever experienced in my life as a teenager, you know, growing up. And I said, I don't want to ever feel so shameful again. What is even more stigmatized with failing is that your friends would have gone on to wear a different uniform, whereas if you were to retain, you will wear the same uniform and everybody will know that you fail and it's not a very big country. So I said I could either drop out of school and go work and contribute to the family, or I could just suck it up and only cry for 24 hours and this could be the longest 365 days of my life or the shortest one. And I decided to repeat the grade. And this is a school that is not very, you know, not very good. Basically put it this way, because I was the fourth child, so I cannot go to any of the decent school. And no teacher wanted to teach that grade. And basically the disciplinary master has no choice but to teach the class. And it was when things changed for me. Of all subjects, first of all, he was teaching math. I mean, when a student is failing, the last thing you want to engage in is math. But yet, he had a way of teaching that he taught me. He didn't just teach math or the curriculum. He taught me. he will say things like, of course you can do this, look at this, you know, and this simple enough, follow this step. And he was talking to the whole class. But I felt that I needed that boost from the teacher. And it's not common for Asian teacher to go on with such praise or accolade or encouragement in class. But that really changed. And following that, I went on to the next grade and became the best all-around student of the year because of one teacher that changed everything. And you asked eventually how I came to America. Was my father was still very abusive, and I had saved some money, about $1,200 US, from babysitting, doing cars, cleaning, custodian, all of this. And the only place I know is the one affiliated to the church, which is Brigham Young University in Hawaii. So I decided, you know, a one-way ticket and bought my ticket and came to America. There you go. Sorry, that was such a long answer.
No, I loved it. I loved it. So let me ask you, what year was that when you escaped?
1993.
So does your parents, did you go back and show them that you graduated and that you're a professor? Have you stayed in contact with your family?
I always stay in contact with my family. It is an Asian culture. We always do that. But they don't understand what is a bachelor degree or let alone a PhD. So nobody came to my graduation. I never have anybody come to my graduation.
Oh, that's so sad. Well, this book that you've written, tell us a little bit about why you decided to write a book that was going to help people understand about if they were flunking, just to have determination and hope. So tell us, do you have some examples of people that you've helped or stories that would be interesting for our listeners?
In fact, in my field, especially in special education, it's like you almost start with a failure, you know. So whether it's poverty, academics, social, psychological, I feel that I could go on and teach and model the best teaching, but in all that I do, I feel like, what if I tell you my story? And I call it empathetic teaching. If I can tell you, I understand what you've been through, and if each of us embrace that, what you've been through, it makes you a better person. I used to be embarrassed, ashamed, you know, just like anybody who has gone through being a professor. I don't want to profess to the world that I am not very smart to begin with, that I stumbled through. But in writing this, it helped me and many of my students and my colleagues and even people, strangers, all the way from Iraq, Kyrgyzstan, had written to me and said that they could relate to it because they are experiencing failure and losing hope in their life, and they can see that they are not alone. We all go through this for a reason. Even though we cannot see, I could not see at that time. But as you go through, in my book, I call them accidental angels, just like this teacher. I have met several accidental angels in my life that they were helping me, saying things that they don't even know. And that's why this, you know, feeling is, even though we are feeling, we are still moving forward. If we allow others to help us, we can transform. We can change. And people will say, wow, you know, you finished your undergrad, got 3 masters, went to a PhD, everything in 8 years. You must be smart. And I said, it wasn't the 8 years. It was the 22 years of failing that helped me understand how to arrive and develop the attributes of persistence, not giving up, the stamina and kindness and empathy that we should embrace failures and not avoid them.
So where do you teach school now? Where are you a professor?
I am a professor at Brigham Young University in Hawaii, where I started from the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I've never interviewed anybody quite like you before, so I'm kind of... I'm searching for things to ask you about. Most of our guests that we have on our show have something to do with UFOs or ETs or celestial beings. So this is the first time that I've had a regular author with, you know, a subject matter that does not cover what we usually cover all the time. So bear with me as I'm trying to
no problem.
Look into your soul a little bit to share with our audience the deep determination that you have taken in your life to bring forth your masterships. So, you know, kudos to you, girl, that you didn't take failure and let it beat you down, that you decided to step into your power and make it work for you. So you talk about the people that have helped you, the angels that have come to help you. Can you tell us a little bit more about who they are and what they have done for you?
Yes, and like I say, these are accidental to me and to them. They don't know that they have help. And I know that all of us in our life have such accidental angels. And that's why a big ethos of what, you know, I share with my, you know, students is no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care. You got to begin everything by caring about the person more than the grade, the background, the way they dress, their education, because I would have been easily written off. Because not even teachers want to teach the repeaters. But because this administrator came in and taught the class, it changed my life forever. And down the road, I have different teachers and friends and even, you know, classmates who are my age that have helped me along the way, which is what I attribute the books to. Like one of them was Julia. She was my age, but super smart, you know, math and everything. But the way she taught me, that was the most important, was she said, it's okay to make mistakes. That's why we learn from it. Why do you think this and this doesn't equate to this? She teach me to stare at my mistake instead of turning away. All we want to do is to close our chapter when we fail. But she said, no, look at it. And she asked me questions. And then when I came to America, again, met with tremendous people. Sometimes people wonder, oh, are you in special education because of your background and your experiences? No, no. Asians normally study accounting, business, computing. Nobody do education, let alone special education. But it was a professor who took a chance on me, and I said, I don't know anything about special education, but if you're trying to start a program, let me help you, and I will learn everything I can about keyboarding and calling people and what on earth is learning disability and all of this. And he took the chance on me, even though I don't have any skills. And when I finished that year, the program got accredited, and I said, you know what, I think I'm going to study this for the rest of my life. So there you go, another person. And then one other professor whom I try to avoid because I do not like to study Chinese. And my English is not very good, you know. And if you just want to be done with your general ed class and avoid that class and that professor forever. But he keep on asking me, well, how are you doing? What is going on with your life? What are the goals that you have set? And I said, you know, I'm done with your class. Why do you keep wondering what I'm doing? You don't have to do anything with me anymore. But he was so persistent, and that's where he counseled me. If you want to be a teacher, go to a top school called Teachers College at Columbia, which I've never heard of because back then we don't have internet and I don't know any of this big school name. So fast forward, when I graduated with my PhD, he flew with his wife from Hawaii to New York City with a fresh ginger lay to give me because he knew that no, none of my parents are not going to be there. And that was how much he cared about me. That I didn't know.
Wow. Wow. That was huge.
Yeah, so I think in our lives is paying it forward by just being a good person and caring about others. You don't need money, wealth, power, status. You can be ordinary and caring, and you don't know if you have touched somebody's life.
I noticed that on Chapter 11, you have a one-liner. We are each of us angels with only one wing, and we can only fly by embracing one another. I love the one-liners that you have in your book. It's really, I'm a big one-liner person myself.
I pick quotes, again, beginning the book with, there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in, by Leonard Cohen. And I think you know, quotation allows to read very deep and relate to each of us, which is the point of this book, that you relate to it. We see cracks and we try to cement it and hide it. But that's how the lights could get in, to let these plants grow. We are all survivors. And at the end of the book, I say, don't compare your life to others. There is no comparison between the sun, the moon, and the stars. They shine when it's their time. We must embrace darkness in order for stars to shine. The star cannot shine, you know, or we cannot see it shine in daylight. It's only when it's dark that we can see that.
Right. Here's a one-liner. There came a time when the risk to remain tight in the bud was more painful than the risk to blossom. Yeah,
yes.
That's a good one. That's
yes,
really
but sometimes
good.
We just wait for that, oh, come on, I just want to, you know, whether win the lottery, pass this one exam, but they don't realize it is not about the destination. It is the transformation of who we are before we arrive at the destination. And in my book, I talk about Alice in Wonderland, when I first heard the story in America, you know, where she came to the crossroad and she didn't know which road to take. And the Cheshire Cat said, well, where do you want to go? And if you don't know where you want to go, it doesn't matter which route you take. But I say, most of us, we don't really know where we want to go. But if I'm willing to take the chance and take one of those roads and be willing to say, you know what, if this is the wrong road, don't cry. Turn around, pick myself up, and try another road. And maybe there are 3,000 roads, but don't be discouraged. I think that transformation of our attributes is more important than trying to arrive at a destination which we may not eventually arrive, but we are a better person, and that's the important thing.
Right. Here's another one-liner. Never mind searching for who you are. Search for the person you aspire to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, we're always looking to be, well, I wish I could be like you. Well, be the one you. Be you. Be the person and the best that you can be. My son recently, you know, trying to ride the bike, and said, Mom, I'm scared. When I ride the bike, I think I'm going to fall. And it dawned on me, you know what, sweetie? It's when you start looking down that you will lose your balance. When you feel like you're falling, keep riding and keep looking forward. Then you know that you're going forward. And it is just like riding a bike, right? And, you know, like you talk about the butt is even more gruesome. The analogy of the butterfly, that I have a quote in there. There is nothing in a caterpillar that tells you it's going to be a butterfly. And knowing what a butterfly goes through and, you know, crystallizing the gruesome transformation, it almost has to ingest its own organ to reform itself. That is very awful, I think. But yet the butterfly knew it has to go through that in order to become that beautiful, you know, being. And sometimes it's hard for us to see where we are when we are going through it. And that's why I hope that this book gives people a sense of hope, wherever that may be. And may I share with you, in the prologue of my book, I said, you know, I decided that it was time I stopped hiding behind my own shame. I want to make sense of my past. There's no shame in being broken. I've been broken over and over again, not by choice or by anyone's intention. Nevertheless, the process has made me struggle to grow more than ruin me. And Vance Havner described this evolution most poignantly. It takes broken soil to produce a crop, broken clouds to give rain, broken grain to give bread, broken bread to give strength. It is the broken alabaster box that gives forth perfume.
Wow. That's strong. Very strong. Wow. So did you meet your husband in Hawaii?
Yes, I did.
And how long have you been married, and do you have children?
Yes, 25 years. I have four children.
Four children. Oh, goodness.
Yes. I've been very blessed. He has been very supportive. Like, people were asked, you know, how did you make it? You know, again, it's not because of intelligence. Most of us, you know, are just average. It's his care, his support, and basically the love of people around us don't try to make it on your own. It's just stupid. We need to count on others. Let others be in our way, and whatever they are, we are going to learn something and us be in somebody's way as well so that we can help others.
So tell us a little bit about your son, Elijah. I just opened the book and see that he has kind of been walking in your footsteps. Tell us about him.
Oh, well, actually, he chose the better path. He became an accountant. He's currently finishing up his graduate study. May 29, he'll graduate from a top university in UT Austin in Master Public Accountancy, and already signed a contract with one of the top big four firms, PwC, to work on June 1st.
Well, good. That's great. So tell us more about the things that you're planning on doing in the future. Are you going to write any more books? Do you have any plans to something else?
Yes. In fact, I have been asked that about writing the next book. And my next book, it may cause some controversy, but again, having been a teacher, professor, administrator, the book is actually called Teaching Disability. So instead of learning disability, the word learning will be crossed out and it will be called teaching disability. Everything you should have learned in school but didn't. That sometimes from two aspects is that students are struggling and the first thing the teacher does is blame it on the students or their background, the parents, when I really want teachers to reflect on themselves. And again, helping parents to empower them to be able to be part of this community of learners. Don't try to do it on your own. But first, as a teacher, I think the book speaks for itself, the power of one teacher that changed my life. And teacher is a profession of caring, not just a curriculum. The C stands for the child and about caring about the child, not just common core or curriculum.
Wow. You really got it going on, Barbara. I really applaud you.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, you have come a long way to be who you are now and writing this book called Failing Up, A Professor's Odyssey on Flunking, Determination, and Hope. What a wonderful – I'm going to take the time to read it when I have the time to read it. So
thank
I'm
you.
Looking at the time, so I'd like to pass you over to my co-host, Ariel, who has the switchboard. There may be someone that wants to call in and make a comment or ask you a question. Would you be willing to do that?
Absolutely.
Okay. So thank you, Barbara, for the
thank
work
you.
That you've been doing and for your determination to stay true to your quest. So back
thank
to you, Ariel.
Okay. Well, and I mean, listening to your story, I can just sense how deeply you care, and this comes from the core of your soul in genuinely wanting to help people the way people were there to help you. And you came from extreme circumstances. So before I go on, I just want to say that if you are already on the switchboard and listening to the show, if you have a question for Dr. Barbara, just press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. If you're listening on the computer, then just pick up the phone, dial 917-889-8292, and then once you're in, press 1, and we'll get you set to go to ask your question to Dr. Barbara. So as Lavendar was saying, we have an audience of very spiritual and metaphysically advanced people, and they have also children who are different, and I think that what you are saying would also apply to our audience in that a lot of the starseed children are labeled as, you know, ADHD, having learning disabilities, when the truth is that they're really so smart that they can't pay attention to what they're teaching, you know, in our current educational system. And so a lot of them do face challenges of feeling like they're different, they're not as good as everybody, and they don't fit in. So, I mean, I can see that this applies as well to children, the children of people everywhere. because it's been a long time since I was in the public school system, but I don't think it's changed a whole lot. And you know, the children are different today, so the educational system has got to go with that. I mean, the children of our audience would do better, I think, doing their own, you know, just tell them this is what you need to study and let them go do it themselves rather than trying to fit them into some mold where they actually are engaged.
Yeah.
So, I just think that applies to any age group, whether it's, you know, first grade or college.
I totally agree with what you're saying, is that labor is a convenience and it doesn't help. And what they don't understand is that putting it on, the child lives with that. Because, like I say, especially for me, my mom says that to me. So you have no choice but to embrace it. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Even if the child is struggling, even if the child is, however, severely disabled and whatever background they come from, is that first and foremost is to care about the person. That's why as an individual, regardless of whether you like my subject, you do well in my subject, is I care about you as an individual. So when students, whether they fail in first grade, in high school, in college, you know what, even though you didn't make it through the class, you got this bad grade, but what is it that you have become? You have become more self-aware. And we do not pay attention to that. I'm not proposing that we just fail for the sake of failing. I'm saying when we fail and things are out of our control, become self-aware. What is it that I can do? What is it I cannot do? I cannot change my circumstance. I cannot change my father. I cannot change my family. I cannot change my teachers and my grade. But what can I do? I can make the decision to adjust my goals or, you know what, not be discouraged. Get on the school, study, find out whatever resources I can, even though the teacher may not be helping, maybe my parents. So that self-awareness can empower you, which is to say, stop blaming everybody for everything. I call it just suck it up. It's life. It's a good thing that what you're going through. Don't be negative. Be positive and strive for that. You know, everyone matters and I matter. Just because I'm different, I am not less. I can do this, and embrace that failure. What did I learn from it? And go from there.
Well, I think, you know, when you learn more from a negative experience, then, you know, if everything just drops in your lap and it's
absolutely
like, oh, that was easy and that was wonderful. So yeah, there is definitely something to be said for the striving and and having to reach and stretch to get to your goal, regardless of what that goal is. And then when they start labeling children, and, you know, if a parent, because I don't know, I mean, you're teaching in college, so your students are, they're in their 20s or late teens, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But when those children, even still, you know, after 1980, the children that were being born seemed to be a lot more advanced than, you know, the generation before, and they catch on a lot more quickly. And sometimes if they're actually smarter than the parents, you know, the parents try to, you know, hold them back a little bit, I think, so that they don't feel so inferior to the children. But then you get labels on them. And then they start giving them pills to try to make them like everybody else, and that's like the beginning of a really bad bad thing, I think.
Well, we just solve everything with a pill in this society. If you notice, it was like as if you get a pill, but in giving that pill, like say whatever medication the child needs, what are you helping the child to develop in terms of attribute? And I call that self-regulation. The discipline, the persistence, the time management, learning how to organize, learning never to miss school, miss a class. That is actually what students struggle in a lot in college. Finally, they are free on their own and they don't know how to organize their time. They don't show up in class. But talking about younger kids is, you know, like I understand, we need labors to get services and to get intervention. But the important thing is caring for the individual, and then as a teacher is to qualify yourself to understand how to work with this student. Go and research, go and find out, and doing your best rather than, well, there's not much you can learn, just put you aside. Like you say, our kids are different. A lot of them are smarter than the teachers. But the teachers are still using the same thing that they taught year after year after year with very little themselves to improve, you know, and that's what there's a disconnect with the rising generation. They could find all this information online. Why would they come to class unless you're sharing something different, right?
Right. Yeah. There's so many different situations, but I mean, I think that I taught music for a while, and when you get someone who just, you can see that they're not comprehending, then you've got to change your method, and then try a different approach, and then when you see the light come on, it's like, oh, they got it. They got it. You have to customize and I'm sure that you can tell as a teacher when you're delivering information, you can tell who is understanding it and who is a little confused. And when you see that, then you have to state it in another way or use a different analogy. But I find it really rewarding when you see that you found the key to open them up.
Yes. Yes.
And I really think
it's the responsibility
of the teacher.
Yeah. I understand. No, teachers are overwhelmed. I've been in that shoe. I know administrators are overwhelmed. They have, paperwork, funding, policies. And that's why I say parents play a very big role. And if you don't have that parent component, the community plays a very big role, which brings to the point of self-advocate. The students daring to raise your hand, the teacher cannot answer, well, what can you do? I can find out. Who else can I ask? Be the advocate for the child or teach the child to be a self-advocate. So, the 4 points that I mentioned, self-awareness, being self-empowered, self-regulated, and self-advocate, are basically the combination of what makes self-determination. Those are not one or the other. You got to have these 4 things in order to know, okay, even if I don't get my goal, can I adjust it? Can I change anything? If not, what else can I do? Rather than spiral into this depression, give me the pill, go to alcohol, we basically resort to trying to find an escape rather than, well, what have I learned from this thing? All these failures, and face it. Don't avoid it. Right.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, when you avoid something like that, it cannot go away. And when you face it,
exactly,
it does go away. So, would you rather have it, all in one time, or would you rather have it in small doses for a long, long time? I'd just rather go jump in, get it, get it behind me, and then you can move on.
But it is not always easy to see that. That's why that 1 year that I had to repeat, I mean, it could be the longest 365 days, very long. But now in looking back, it was the shortest one in the bigger realm of things, right? It's the shortest thing. I pay a small price, but at the time, it looks like a really heavy price for a teenager to be humiliated. I got to pay my own supplementary fee because my parents were not going to support me to repeat another year. And so it was very hard.
Well, you had the self-determination. And, sometimes the more, at least with me, the more someone tells me, oh, you can't do that, the more inclined I am to just prove them wrong. It's like, okay, watch me.
You know what? That is so true. And in my book, I talk about this, we call it stubbornness and self-determination. People can take the knowledge and skills that they have and turn around and be really, really bad. That is the danger of self-determination. That's why I said, great, self-determination is great, but you must embrace the ethic of caring. If you do not care about yourself or the society or become pro-social, you can take this self-determination in a very wrong way, and we have many examples of that. Very smart people who commit very bad crimes because self-determination alone is very dangerous.
Yeah, you definitely have to have the caring and the empathy, as you said.
Yes. The pain.
Not only with others, but for yourself as well. I mean,
exactly.
It will serve. Yeah.
Exactly.
So yeah, and as you were talking about, somebody setting a goal and then failing In our line of work, where we use astrology to to see what the person's strengths are, and that's what we call what your name is on. And if sometimes if somebody decides, well, I'm going to be an accountant because it's safe, it's steady, it's normal, but in their chart, you could see that they were to be an artist because they have all these markings for that kind of thing. And sometimes when you're trying to go down the wrong road where, it wasn't your purpose, originally your destiny to do that. And sometimes the failures help you get on a different track. It's like, well, let me go about this a different way. And then before you know it, the synchronicities kick in. You meet someone, just randomly, and they change your life, just like happened, you. But you have to certainly embrace the failures and know, where's your heart? Where's your passion? What do you really, really want? Not what someone said that, my child has to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm. I think you pointed out two important things. One is how society defines success. Because we use grades and profession and salary and wealth and all of this thing. I say if a person, whatever circumstance, became a custodian, it's the best custodian. It's an honest person. You can still live a life and you'll be more at peace with yourself than somebody who has wealth and popularity and everything and is depressed and is alcoholic and all of that. So don't let those things, even a grade, the teacher gave me a D grade. Don't be mad. It's that, that's the teacher's opinion of it. I feel that I deserve this thing. It's fine. What is it that you can accept, because my life is not defined by grade. So in the book I talk about, it got to be defined more than us. Not because somebody wants me to go to school. Somebody wants me to do the homework. Somebody wants me to get this profession. This is what I want to do. And I'm going to do it. And when I fail, I need to learn to take responsibility because I make the decision. But I'm not going to be discouraged. I can turn around and change again. The only thing we are working against, everybody on the same, is time. We all have the same amount of time. And sometimes we discover it a little too late. But what do we learn out of it? Now we can help others. And that's the important thing. So don't even admit that, well, that's it, I've wasted my whole life. You did not. You could have passed on your experiences to other people so that they don't have to go through that. And that is a good thing that you should embrace and that we all should embrace that.
I completely agree. And no matter what you do, if you do it the best you can, there is value in that. As a matter of fact, I was just thinking about that the other day, about the people that put the groceries in the bags, and they stand at the end of the cashier line. And I watched this little girl the other day, and she was pleasant, she was helpful, she was, friendly, and just, she was the best bagger I ever saw. And it's like, there you go. No matter what your job is, if you do it the best you can and you smile at people and you have an effect on people, and I'll remember her.
I love
for that.
You have on people. You think you remember what your teacher taught? No, you remember the effect that teacher has on you. And that's why it can be contagious. It can go everywhere. In fact, I love that you bring the example, because it's, you know, like somebody help you with something, and even though it's so minute, I always make it a point, hey, I want to let your supervisor know. I will write a letter. I will thank the person. It matters to that person that somebody thank her or him, you know, even though it's such a small thing. We need to take the time to remember the small things all count, because they accumulate. And sometimes that one word, it could change the person's day. And for me, hey, just the lesson of what the teacher say, you can do this, you can do, and he's not really talking to me, but it changed my entire perception of how I saw myself, you know. And so it can make a difference. And paying it forward is important.
Oh, it's everything. You know, people that, you know, if you've had good luck, you know, provide something for someone else and pay it forward. You know, if someone helps you, you help the next person. And that's
right.
Just that's where the future, in my opinion, is going, as people become more self-aware, they become more responsible, they
mm-hmm.
wake up a little bit more, and show more compassion and grace in their day-to-day life.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to have, I mean, you've got so many awards that it was like, oh my gosh, look at, I mean, the things that you've done, the things you've accomplished, that is, I mean, that's, it's wonderful. But there are also people who maybe only have a high school education who are out, you know, helping the little old ladies across the street. And that,
yeah.
that's just, I think, where we're headed, hopefully, as more and more people become more empathetic and more compassionate and more aware and breaking out of the constraints that, you know, especially in education.
Yeah.
That, I mean, our education system really hasn't changed much since it started.
No, it becomes, you know, like competitive, survivor, it's all on your own, that I think we missed a very big picture of why are we getting people educated? Is it so they can memorize the dates and they can write this essay? And, you know, I've lived in the Middle East and some of the most war-torn area near Syria, you know, in my travel as a Fulbrighter. I tell you, these are some of the most compassionate people, despite they don't have anything. They are in chaos. And yet, if you need a piece of bread, they will give everything to you. That is what they learn, greatest compassion that I've ever seen. So don't take for granted, because we have, you know, things at our fingertips. That's something we take for granted, what we have. We miss the opportunity to become empathetic and more compassionate, like what you said.
Yeah, you know, and that's the American culture is so different. For people that have traveled like you, and I mean, I've traveled a little bit, but I haven't been to like the Middle East, but I've been through Europe, and it's such a different culture. And you realize that in a lot of ways, Americans have more, but yet they have less when it comes to the heart and the compassion. And I think a lot of people, you know, they get their education so that they can get a good job, so that they can have money. And
yeah, I mean, those are understandable. Yeah. But in my book, that's what this professor at Thomas Sobel in Colombia asked me, what is it that you really want to do with your education? I was thinking, well, I got a job, you know, all of this. He said, what do you really want to do? And he asked me that question. I had to think about it for so long. It's the value and the impact that you have. What is it you really want to do with your learning? Like Mark Twain said, never let your education interfere with your learning. What exactly do I want to do with all of this knowledge? I now want to go help others, to advocate for those who are voiceless, you know, as children with disabilities and all of that, to better train the teachers, not so I can get a job and get summer off. And those are important, but don't miss the bigger picture, the underlying thing that embrace your passion. Why do you wake up every day to do what you do?
It's so important. is so important, and I think to a great degree, a lot of Americans have kind of missed that, and they get caught up in all of the, you know, the structures and the you know, getting back and forth to work and getting your groceries and raising the kids and I mean, just really spread very thin, so that there's not a lot of room or time to reach out, and so it's sometimes you just have to step back and get away from, you know, the routine, so you can take a look at it and see how it's really working for you.
You know what's interesting? Like you say, sometimes we're so self-absorbed, but what is interesting is when you start opening your eyes, they are everywhere. Opportunities are everywhere. The other day we go into 7-Eleven. My son wanted, you know, a shake. I said, well, every time we buy something, don't ever think you're entitled to this shake. What can you give twice the amount to somebody? Pay for the person in front of you. And there happened to be a homeless person. We're like, we'll buy the soda and a dinner for this person. What else can you do? They're everywhere. Yeah, opportunities everywhere for you to be compassionate. So if we start opening our eyes, we'll be surprised. Oh, my goodness, I wish I had more money, time to give. They're everywhere. So, you know, give yourself a challenge, our listeners, that every day before the end of the day, I'm able to say something, give something, share my love for somebody before the end of the day.
That's a wonderful, I don't even know what to call it, a philosophy. And usually when I'm wrapping up the show, that this last thing I say is find grace, find compassion, find gratitude, and every
day.
Wow,
I like that.
And every day.
I like that.
Yeah,
yes.
Because that's how we step into 5D. And I don't know how much you've heard about, you know, the shifting of the energies of the earth and the raising of the frequencies, bringing more light into the planet. And even if you're not familiar with those terms, you're already doing it.
Oh.
That's the way you live your life.
I think we are more connected than we are different. So in what you're saying, I totally understand it from the Chinese point of view, because we also have five elements, right? The earth, the star. So we also have the five elements. We are not alone. You know, so have the hope, and at the same time, reach out and make that connection. We have to connect with people. Hopefully, more than just through wealth and your status, is connecting with them through adding the value of compassion and grace, and like what you said.
Yeah, you can. Every one of us can be what you call the accidental angel.
Yes,
just happen to show up, and you just happen to be there in the right moment.
Yeah.
At a time when, you know, a word, a pat on the back, it can have such an impact. And a lot of us kind of forget that we've got that power because it is easy to get so, you know, caught up in the, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to go here, I got to go there, I got to pick up the dry cleaning. And you kind of, it's easy to get covered up. So I'm so happy that you've written this book. And
Thank you.
There's a quote that I have often used, and I don't even know who it's from, but it is that you only fail when you quit trying.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
You know, up to the point, you know, if you don't quit trying, you cannot fail. You just stand back up.
Yeah. So that trying is a continuous tense. It requires that continuity. It's a process that you keep on going. And so even as you fail, look up, you know, somebody will be there to lift up your hand. And you never know who that person could be.
Well, that's, you know, and as long as we keep our hearts open to, you know, well, I don't know if you've seen the movie Castaway with Tom Hanks. You never know what the tide's going to bring in. So
that's right.
Even when you think, you know, that you're going to die, like he did in the movie.
Yes.
You just never know what the tide will bring in. So it's important to keep that optimistic attitude, even when you feel like, you know, your knees are shaking and you could fall down any minute. Look around, because there will be somebody there.
Yes.
There will be somebody there.
keep trying. Like you say, you know, earlier you had mentioned that, you know, we just, oh, every doors are slamming on you. You know what? Sometimes those doors have to close so that you will go carve a new door. Otherwise, you will not even think of building a new door because you kept waiting for doors to open. Well, sometimes the doors have to slam on you so that you have to go build another door. And it's okay because you have developed that strength, that persistence, that stamina to be able to, I will build my own door. And it's possible.
Oh, absolutely. You know, as long as we have breath, there is always the next try. And, the next try could be the door that opens, even if you have to build the door yourself. So, yes, always. And always remember that if you are ready to receive help, it'll come.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You may not know where it's coming from, but you will receive help. And I think if you live your life, if a person lives their life like you have, enriching others and empowering others, then when you need a leg up, there will always be somebody there for you.
Mm-hmm. And
always.
I feel like you don't need to go look for them. You be one first. And they will happen in your life.
Absolutely. I so agree. Well, it has just been wonderful speaking with you. You're a very positive, optimistic, and hopeful person. And I know that you live that 24 hours a day. And I'm glad for your students that they have a teacher that cares and that you will make a difference in their lives.
I'm inspired by you as well. Thank you.
Hopefully there will be other teachers that you can train in your theories.
One classroom at a time, one teacher at a time.
That's right. That's right.
Yes.
And you'll feel good
one
about
matters.
It at the end of the
yes.
day.
That's right.
So
thank you so much.
You are so welcome. I just want to mention again, the name of your book is Failing Up. It is your story of determination and hope. And your website is BarbaraHong.com. So anybody with children, it would really benefit you to take a look at the book, at the website. And do you do any kind of consultation for if someone wanted to contact you, could they get some guidance?
Yes, I have all the information on my website. What is it that I do for schools, for parents, for students at different grade age level or difficulties and challenges in life? Yes, on my website we have all the information.
Okay, great. Well, it's been a pleasure having you with us this evening, and
thank you for
the work that you're doing, for the strength of your spirit. And that's got to be an inspiration to anyone around you and hopefully to everyone that hears this radio show. So you keep up the good work and let us know if you have another book coming out. We'd like to hear about
yes, it. Yes, for sure. Thank you very much for the time.
You are so welcome. So we have been talking to Dr. Barbara Hong, and make sure you check out her website, BarbaraHong.com, and her book, Failing Up. So that's it for us tonight, everyone. Thank you, Dr. Hong, for being with us. And we thank everyone for listening. Not quite yet. So I'm going to cue our lead-out outro music. So if there was something else you had to say, that would be the time.
No, I'm good. Just wondering.
Okay. Great.
Sorry.
Well, until next week, everyone, thank you for listening, and make sure you find gratitude and compassion in every day. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.